Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso.
Hello.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And, of course, Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Hey there.
And today we have a special guest, Eisner Award nominee for a spread he did in Mad Magazine. We'll talk about that later. Please welcome Mark Palm.
Hello. How's it going?
Hey, Mark. We're so happy to have you here.
It's nice to be here.
All right. To talk.
Down to the store.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. In store. I love it when they're in store, not online, because it's so much easier that way.
Yes, I can actually comic book store.
See what you look like. All right, tell us more about Mark. I'm going to throw it over to the capable hands of Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Well, all I'm going to do is throw it back to Mark, because I did a really crummy job of researching his artist background. So, Mark, please tell us about your background in cartooning. Did you study somewhere, or are you self-taught? Where'd you come from, buddy?
I come from Michigan, mm-hmm. and I was completely self-taught, pretty much.
Excellent.
It began with just kind of emulating things that I saw. So, mm-hmm. like, Garfield was a major one. I'd have, like, Trapper Keeper folders, and I'd try to draw off of those.
Wait. You had a Trapper Keeper?
Oh, of course.
Do you know what those are worth now?
Oh, I still have one somewhere.
They're like hundreds of dollars. I know, because I tried to get some for props for a play once.
Wow.
Yeah, anyway, sorry, I derailed you. Keep going.
I still have a huge storage space full of toys and comics. I've got like 8 boxes of long boxes out there.
Excellent.
I'm itching to have space and money to bring them out here. Mm-hmm. But I got cool stuff like that. But those covers, then it was like, the Turtles cartoon happened, Simpsons mm-hmm. happened. Mm-hmm. So if I could learn how to draw those, I was getting attention in school. People were liking me. And then someone ripped off all my drawings.
No.
That made me weird. So then I was like, oh, I don't know. So I just started drawing for myself and doing mm-hmm. other things. I mean, I was obsessed with mascots, mm-hmm. Chester Cheetah.
Uh-huh.
I love the 7-Up dot.
Yeah.
So I would draw like... I like Pepsi, so I started doing like the Pepsi like weird ball thing.
Did you have dreams of crafting your own mascot?
No, but I guess I was kind of. Like,
or you just
I was
were enamored
designing
of
my own. There was even like a bottle
mascot.
Of Pepsi that was like chilling on a beach.
Uh huh.
So I don't know. That was like weird stuff. And then Mad Magazine. That was the one that
really
oddly enough it comes around. Mad Magazine, Spy vs. Spy. So a buddy gave me like a paperback book of Spy mm-hmm. vs. Spy, and I was obsessed and started drawing my own Spy vs. Spy.
So you're I get the impression from talking to you before we sat down in front of the mic that you are definitely a compulsive illustrator. That you're the kind of person that in any environment, you know, when you tune out yet tune in, because I know I did the same thing, is that I found that I was a better listener when I was doodling in a meeting and I got crap for it. But it's like, no, I'm accessing a different part of my brain. I think you're that kind of person.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's
yeah.
And then, like, because I remember hearing something about that. They're like, mm-hmm. people who, when they're on the phone and they're doodling, they're actually listening. They're still paying attention. Or, like, if you're stuck on an idea, instead of sitting there and being like, how do I spell this word? You know, mm-hmm. I have problems spelling. But I'm like, and it's like, if you just sit there and doodle, then your brain changes. It's like... trying to distract yourself from a sneeze or like a, you know, like hiccups or something like that. Like, you slap yourself on the leg like, I'm not going to sneeze. And you don't. Or the hiccup thing is you got to distract your body and it stops that thing from reacting or whatever.
So from a wasted youth of doodling and cartooning, how did you come to start producing your own work?
That was in...
publishing your own work, rather.
93.
Yeah.
I was in like a junior in high school and I made some sort of comics, like with a buddy, just on like line paper, and we stapled it, and it was like one copy.
Right.
But in 93, I started branching off from like, you know, X-Men and Image and all that stuff, and started mm-hmm. like finding independent stuff. So my buddy turned me on to like Madman, mm-hmm. Milk and Cheese, and mm-hmm. Evan Dork, and you know, I'm wearing the
you are
shirt right now. And then I found Too Much Coffee Man on my own, because it's the 90s. I want to be a cool grunger kid.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I turned into. And, you know, coffee. So I, out of previews at the comic shop in my little town of Coldwater, they were letting me order what I wanted. So, like, Too Much Coffee Man, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
Second issue that Shannon puts in the spread, here's how to make your own zine. You have to make a little mini comic. Pull this out, fold it, staple it, trim it, whatever. You do this your own out of... blows my mind.
Yeah.
I can make this shit. Oh, man, there's a comic shop in town. I wonder if they'd carry my book. They did. I had a little like contest, and I had a little signing there, and like I made a best friend. It was like in the 90s, I had like a little local newspaper write an article about me. It was like mind-blowing. I could do this. It's like attention. So like, so I just got obsessed and kept on doing it.
And did that energy in that did that energy propel you forward?
Oh yeah, I just kept on going down. I mean, I had okay. like probably 8 issues. My first comic was called The Ant,
mm-hmm.
and it was like a basically Too Much Coffee Man without the coffee cup on his head. And he was like a quote, and, you know, he was a little person wrestler, midget wrestler,
mm-hmm.
That got kicked out because he actually wasn't, and so. They kicked him out. You're like, you're too tall. Get out. You know. So that's his backstory. But he kept the costume as like this like luchador ant character, and he just kind of bumbled around life. Like I was obsessed with like 60s like Alex Toth cartoons, mm-hmm. like Birdman, all that stuff was like mm-hmm. on Cartoon Network at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Getting really into that. So I was like mixing in those kind of like spoofy kind of things, and then doing like he's like a lazy fat guy, just like, you know, finding aliens and whatever else.
Nice. So what brought you to Seattle?
The weather.
Me too.
Because you were sick and tired. Oh, yeah. You sick and tired of the frosty north,
yeah,
were you?
The extremes yeah. of Michigan is like too cold, too rainy, or you know, like too mm-hmm. icy, rainy, and then too like brutally hot and yeah. muggy. Like I just hated it.
I always tell a story about I went to graduate school in Madison, Wisconsin. I tell a story. I had hair as long as yours when I got there, and growing up in the Willamette Valley, I never dried my hair. And that first winter morning that I went to class with long hair, moist from the shower, and it froze and it broke. I was like, wow. I have to change my life. Oh, I have man, to change yeah. my life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will never go back, buddy. No, so you have my moral support
on
that
one. I
don't
want to go back. Yeah. Like, so I liked spring and fall. Mm-hmm. It was the best. So what's Seattle but spring and fall?
Pretty much.
All the
yeah.
time. And sometimes it's like too much summer. It's like, it's yeah. too sunny.
yes.
But yeah,
you
so I came
right
out here
perfectly.
And
yes.
yeah, I wanted to make it in the comics. You know, I visited the Fantagraphics
mm-hmm.
house, which I thought was going to be like a condo, like a, you know, complex. I thought it was going to be in a business.
Out in Mountain Lake Terrace?
Something.
Or Lake
know.
City?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no idea, paced back and forth, like, is this the place? I guess it's the place. And I finally dared myself to, like, go up and, you know, knock on the door. And they're like, there's no tour. What do you want? Like, I don't know. I just thought I'm a cartoonist in town.
I can't remember whose house is that out there. And it's out in Lake City, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Was it Gary Gross' house?
Yeah, they own it. It's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
And then they rent, like, the top floor to, you right. know, a couple or something like that. But,
right.
yeah, they've had it forever. And... Hmm. You know, you go in the front door, or you don't ever knock on the door. Don't
okay.
go to the place. But that front door you would walk into, and it was like, Gary is right there.
Mm-hmm.
He was at a desk in front of you in the living room of this, you know, house. And it's like, oh, hi. You know, it was awkward, but.
But that's lo-fi publishing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a low overhead, right?
Yeah,
I mean, they have
yeah.
people renting above the offices to help pay for the office. I mean, which they own the house. So it's just like,
yeah.
we're paying for books with the rent above, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Probably not. I don't know.
And is that how you got your foot in the door to publish?
Kind of, sort of, because I kept on sort of bugging them or mm-hmm. being around and, you know, being cool, playing it cool. Just be like, go to the events at the Fantagraphic store, meet cartoonist. And then Jack Cohn, who's the publicist there. She kind of just shows up. She was fresh off of Dark Horse. I think she was working there.
Mm-hmm.
Moved over to Fana and didn't know anybody. So we just kind of palled up. And then knowing her, she's like, oh, hey, we're going to take Gary Panter out for dinner. Do you want to come? Yeah, yeah, sure. I'll come and have a burger. Oh, with,
let me see if I'm free. Yeah.
Yeah, let's go to the Cafe Racer with Charles Burns. Okay, yeah, sure.
Oh, no way.
So I was like, get to hang out with these people, and because you play it cool. I'm not like being a nerd and asking Charles Burns, like, oh, what kind of pen do you use? Can you sign my thing? And oh, man, I can't believe you're here and you grew up here. I went to your house and I saw, you know, I don't want to be a creep. I never even got autographs from a lot of these people because I don't care about that.
Right.
Or just like, I'd rather sit across the table, have a beer, and talk about, you know,
mm-hmm.
the French fries you like.
Mm-hmm. Being
yeah.
part of the community, right?
Yeah.
Just being there in
exactly.
the scene.
Just,
yeah.
They're human. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what to talk about when I come across someone who's big. Like, what can I say to you that you haven't heard?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like,
they would probably prefer to hear about it, like, what kind of food do you like?
Yeah.
Instead
yeah.
of like,
yeah. 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 Ask them a weird question or something, you know. So
yeah.
that's how I just, you know, tried to do that. And then that eventually, like, Jack and I were just friends. And she's like, dude, there's an opening. You should get this. And it was just to answer phones and whatever. But it's like, I'm there. Mm-hmm. I'm in.
Gotcha.
And
it's how you network.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I slung videos to Gary Groth, you know, all the time. I worked at Scarecrow Video for 8 years. Mm. So he'd come in with his son, Conrad, who now works as...
Your Seattle hipster cred is, like, incredible. You know that, right?
Yeah, it's weird. I still think it was just something like,
who even notices me? I'm in Seattle. Well, I'm not nothing, you know.
Yeah, well, we're
weird.
We're trying to help you out here, buddy.
Yeah,
we're
trying to, I mean, yeah. I appreciate
we're
it.
We're trying to drag you into the light. Are you all right with this?
We're in the light? Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about
is this like
your...
Flatliners? Are you guys going to bring me back, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Actually, can we next, talk about some of his
Yeah, you want to talk about the independent comics or sure. You want to talk about the Mad Magazine?
Let's work our way up to Mad Magazine.
Okay, go for it, Chris.
Cool. Yeah. Both sides.
Yeah, you got it.
You've published Punch to Kill, which I think it's 4 years old now?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. And we've had this at the store before, and you did it with Kevin Clark, Will Long, and tell us a bit about that.
Punch to Kill. So Kevin Clark and Will Long, I know them both through Scarecrow. Will and Kevin still work there. Will wasn't working there when we worked on this, but Kevin and I always talked about movies, talked about comics, everything we were reading. He always had a monthly poll. And so we'd trade all this stuff. We always had the similar taste. And I was working on The Intruder, so I was kind of busy with doing like these one-page, like arty kind of mm-hmm. you know, things. But we just kept on. I was like, you've got all these stories. I have a hard time being a storyteller, like having my own story or something long or whatever. I'm like, why don't we collaborate? That's... come up with something. We got the same taste. We could do this pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So Punch to Kill was something that he and Will and a bunch of other people had put together as like a, remember when Robert Rodriguez had the Grindhouse like mm-hmm. contest? So they submitted a trailer called Punch to Kill to that. And you know, obviously they didn't win. Else we'd be watching that instead of Hobo with a Shotgun. we'd be better off. Punch to Kill is pretty rad. But it, you know, super ambitious, and so that was the thing. It was like, we got this really ambitious thing. We got all these characters. We got all these scenarios. Mm-hmm. We could do this as a comic, and I'm like, yeah. So we started talking about like our influences, what we like. We're like, dude, you're like, when was the last time you watched Fist of the North Star? He hadn't. So I was like, you got to watch Fist of the North mm-hmm. Star. You know. So we just went through and all these action tropes and all these things that we love, and we're like, that's mashed together. It's like come up with this thing and mm-hmm. take it seriously, even though we think it's, you know, it's kind of silly, but we, you know. But we don't want it to be like dumb,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, we appreciate stuff like Benjamin Mara's stuff or whatever. It's like, it's obviously a parody or satire of these mm-hmm. things, even though he's like really serious about keeping in character while mm-hmm. he's drawing it.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted that, but we didn't want it to be a funny thing. We're like, no, man, just believe it, go along with it. Yeah. And that's like with, you know, early anime or manga where you're like, this is so fantastical and crazy, like I just have to keep going and see where this leads us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they have quite a bit of the story already kind of written and then figured out, and so we're like, we could do this for like 5-6 issues and then we could do another arc after that. We'll, you know. And so it's been taking us a little while because I'm slow. I have a 40-hour week job and a mm-hmm. life, and
you're busy. Yep. Yeah.
Drawing comics takes a while, so
yeah.
I'm working on issue 3. I've got it all like thumbnailed. I'm tightening all those up. Meanwhile, doing this other book, The Fang.
Mm-hmm.
That one I did in between Punch to Kill 2 and now 3.
And this came out. The Fang came out, I think, in last August or so.
Yeah, I did an earlier like. It was out 2 short runs ago. So 2 years ago, I debuted it, and it's totally self-published. I do print on demand with Lulu.com,
mm-hmm.
Which I knew what to expect because I had done an earlier like paperback kind of book of theirs. And I was like, this is exactly what I want. I know I want to do like this little pocketbook thing, kind of referencing like the Italian, like Fumetti's.
That's right.
Like,
yeah, or the like, the 70s goth, or the 70s goth horror paperback
like
books.
What is it,
yeah.
the Giallo or something?
Giallos
kind of that sort of
yes,
stuff.
Yeah. Well, especially with the, you can't, sorry, listeners, you can't see the font that he chose for this and the colors, but this just reminds me of those schlocky paperbacks that Guillermo del Toro is so enamored of.
Oh,
you know?
Absolutely. And there's also, there was, a big influence was, there's an art book of Mexican horror pulp novels.
Gotcha.
Mm.
And they came like without the title, so it was just like the original art. But there's a lot of like tropes in those. There's like a face like ghostly in the background,
right. mm-hmm.
like this rough painted texture, and then characters mm-hmm. on top of it, and mm-hmm. kind of rough. And I remember totally. Like looking at me like, I'm not a great painter, but I'd like to be as good as this. I want to capture this kind of thing. So
nice.
I went with that and kind of it was the whole packaging. I like went to Goodwill, you know, secondhand stores and looked at backs of paper, you know, paperback books, and I photocopied, you know, photoed a bunch of them.
Nice. Oh, man.
I want to, you know, have a whole package. It has the EC horror vibe.
Yeah. It totally has that. But then there's also like a little Sesame Street or something in there. So, you know, like, which I love. I'm just like,
to this one.
That's like Lady Vampire.
Yeah, like, right. She's like sort of like the Count.
The Count a little bit, which is great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. it's a strange thing, and it's evolved from doing like posters where like down in LA there was a comedy show called... competitive erotic fan fiction, and it was a comedy show, and like they had comedians come up that had pre-written like erotic stuff and fan fiction, and then they had like a bunch of contestants on there that they would be like chose from the audience. They get like a thing like, oh, you gotta do you know, gummy bears or something like that, or Simpsons, and they gotta go on the back while everyone else recites their own. So I started doing posters for that, and the first thing he liked was like when I did like these two girls just like nude, but they had Muppet heads and sort of like how their noses
you pushed kinds of buttons with that one, didn't you?
Well, it weirded people out because it wasn't like, and I try it like with all the Muppet stuff, or I call it Smuppet stuff.
Yes. Oh, that's amazing.
I don't want to take it to a nasty deviant art realm,
because
that's super easy and super like that's boring.
The path's
like,
right there for you.
It's like somebody's already done it. Why do I want to do that? Also, like I like that they always have like a kind of a smile. They're always perpetually kind of happy and into things. So like having, you know, women nude, having a big smile on their face, having a good time. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah,
I mean, that's why Betty Page was great, because she looked like she was having a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. And she was a lot of times. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, you know, so that is just like kind of mixing those things and making them uncomfortable but comfortable, and I'm trying to
it's a fun blending, because you have this sort of like wholesome feel, and even like the character in there has this sort of appeal of like, you can trust me, it's fine.
Yeah, right.
And like luring that femme fatale, and then it's got a lot of great elements in it. That,
and then it gets to a point in the book where the first place I went to go actually get it printed said they couldn't, because it was going to be printed in China, and they don't allow genitals to be printed in their book. So I had to go to Lulu. so that's a hint. The book's a little erotic.
Gotcha.
My line is a comedic horror comedy, with an erotic, you know, twist to it or something like that.
Well, one of the things that fascinates me about your style is that your style is so malleable. It's and that kind of gives you greater breadth to imitate and borrow from other people's style, which, and I'm going to transition to Mad Magazine now. Can we do that? Because in the piece that you got the Eisner nomination for was a send-up of...
the ghastly crumb tinies.
I've got it right in front of me, and I can't even read it. Edward Gorey's ghastly crumb tinies, dating back to 1963. Can you tell us about how this piece came about?
Maybe this weird chronology. So about 10 years ago, I was obsessed with, you know, Gorey. I found stuff, I got some of it, and I got like really into it. Started like, you know, emulating it, figuring out like how he cross-hatched and why he had these patterns, and like the balance and the creepiness and how to get mystery in your drawing. You know, so I was like doing that, and I've done like comics, and I've done a book I re-released this year called The Naked Tree. So like a little amphigory, or like how he knit it. That's actually a word that, you know, it means like a something that doesn't make sense, but it's like a poem or whatnot.
And it's now a term that's in our lexicon.
So I was doing my own of that. So I got versed in Gorey and knew how to kind of do that. So then, as I told you guys off mic, that, you know, Larry Reed has been a huge influence and a big help for me in my life in Seattle, since meeting him and getting his influence. So he knew the art director at Mad, told me to submit stuff, that she'd be open to it. She's looking for new people and whatever else, and her taste is good. So, cool. Send some stuff. She's like, yeah, I like your stuff. I've seen it. I'll get back to you.
Don't call us.
Right. Yeah, sort of. You know, like, and I expected as much. I'm like, this is Mad Magazine. Like, I have no idea what to submit. I don't know what type of thing they, you know, like they're in another realm, and they also just rebooted, right?
So right,
like
right.
At 2018, the beginning is number one, so it's a whole new thing happening. So I don't know what that means. But then there's one night I got, I don't know what I ate, up at 5 a.m. Just so, oh, dear. But I'm supposed to get up probably like an hour and a half later, and I'm like, do I want to like try to go back to sleep for this miserable, like it's not, it's gonna be restless, it's gonna be horrible. So I'm already in that mind, like I'm already kind of awake. Mm-hmm. Like I haven't heard from Susie, maybe I should send some more.
Mm-hmm.
So I just get up, put together a little PDF.
Mm-hmm.
And in there was a strip that I did for the Seattle Weekly where it was in a gory style, but it's like Kurt Cobain's sweater escapes the EMP, goes to a cafe to get some Pennyroyal tea. I don't know why sweater wants an abortion tea, but it rhymed. It went well. They published it. I sent that, and that she was after me the next that morning. Like, can you do more of this?
Mm.
You'd save my ass.
Nice.
Can you do this in 10 days? I need
Dang.
The Ghastly Gun Tiny or Ghastly Crumb Tinies adapted in 4 pages for Mad Magazine.
Now, where does Matt Cohen come in this story?
He wrote it.
He wrote
so,
it.
And you'd never met him up until this point.
I had never met anybody. I've never done anything for Mad.
Right.
I don't know how the system even works.
did you think this was like a legit thing that was happening to you? Or did you feel like someone
totally
was
pranking you? Oh, no, I totally believed it, but it was just like, it's like, this is crazy. I don't know what to do, but yes, of course I'm going to say yes.
Right.
I can, 10 days, sure. Luckily, I had the confidence because I had emulated him mm-hmm. so well. And I'm mm-hmm. like, well, I can do this.
Yep.
And, you know, due to like, the, you know, whatever, luckily nothing was in my way. I wasn't working on a project or I had deadlines. I'm like, 10 days, I, you know, knocked this thing out. And we did it as efficient as I could. But they had already done a ton of work. Mm-hmm. An artist actually dropped out. That's how that's why I saved her ass.
Okay.
This guy gotcha. Like dropped out and said, I don't want to do it.
And that's kind of how it happens sometimes. It's just luck of the draw.
And they had it laid out. They had things already in place. They had kind of sketched out some sort, you know, like real small thumbnails. Like, here, we want this, and this is what mm-hmm. we want referenced. No, fine, that's easy. So just whipped it out, just kind of put it through the gory filter, tried to imagine and try to emulate his aesthetics or how he would choose to look at a school or something like that and kind of mm-hmm. like do that. So I did my best and I had no idea what was going to happen. Like,
so just to qualify, the piece that Mark and Matt Cohen did was called Ghastly Gun Tinies. And it's the strip updates Crumb's Gory's Ghastly Crumb Tinies. and so that the strip is a modern take on this horrific alphabet. The strip reflects the terror experience during a school shooting. It starts out pretty innocently enough. It starts out, you know, A is for Alice, the young science whiz, but it gets progressively darker as we go along through the alphabet. D is for Dana, who had a hall pass, is introduced while an ominous shadow lurks outside the classroom door. But before long, the strip becomes really clear what it's all about. F is for Frank, more than a statistic. G is for Greg, who is caught unawares. H is for Hero, who needs more than prayers. So you kind of get the picture there. You did a marvelous job of for lack of a better descriptive term, aping a gory style. But
no, I'm an ape.
Are you an ape? Okay.
I'm an ape man. Yeah. Okay. I told Susie as much afterwards. I'm like, and I'll be your ape man. I want more work. And she's like, oh, I was trying to figure out something for your real style. I'm like, no, I'll be an ape man. I'm more comfortable doing that. I don't want, because it was like the pressure of writing for Mad, or what do you, like, I don't know. I don't keep up with current topics enough to really be that on it.
But the story had a profound impact on the zeitgeist. And there was a piece in, was it New Yorker magazine? Or was it New York Times?
Spoke to the New York Times.
Yeah, and it was, and the writer in the New York Times article was pretty meticulous in discussing the impact of the story. And I think a lot of people that read that article were like, "Oh my God, you mean Mad Magazine's still a thing?"
Yeah. Oh yeah. Exactly.
That was my
put it back on the map.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read that same article and I was interested. You know, I knew Mad Magazine was still a thing because recently they came out that they're ceasing print publication. They're going online only. And they were they were actually concerned about the length of the piece. It's like a 4-page spread, and they said it's not funny.
Oh yeah, no, it's dead serious. And I got the script. I was like, showing it to my girlfriend, like, this isn't funny.
Yeah.
This is like heavy as fuck. Like, this is gonna, sorry if I can't swear, but
totally.
too late now, pal. Yeah, you guys get to edit it.
But it's, but in this same New York Times article, it talks about the buzz that it was generating. And there's quotes from people like John Hodgman. And what was it like having
Patton Oswald?
Right. Yeah, just having that reaction to something you did in 10 days.
Oh, I know. So 10 days and then wait 2 months or something like that, or a month, because I did in August. So in September, October came out. Waiting, you know, expecting, like, oh, man, what are they going to do? And, like, following Matt on Instagram new and kind of be like, oh, this is how they post stuff. Okay, there might be, like, a preview. What are they going to do? And, like, oh, how's this going to go? Like, because I was nervous. I didn't know how well it was going to go off. Like, this could be great. This could be like, man, this is going to hurt. This is, you know, powerful. Mm. Or it's going to hurt me because the NRA is going to be on my ass.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, there's going to be some, like, bad thing against, like, guns or whatever. Luckily,
trolls will come out.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily for Dizwire on Twitter, who just went and, like, he got a copy earlier than pretty much anyone else. Like, it was on the newsstands before it should have been or something like that. He got a thing, snapped all the photos, and he's like, man, what a gut punch. Mads really got it.
Mm-hmm.
Throws that up on Twitter. 1,000 tweets later,
mm-hmm.
I'm on the phone with the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you want to talk about this? I'm like, yeah. And I don't know what to do about it. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'll talk to you. Why not? So I do all that, and it's just like it happened. It's like something that I wanted and thought was, you know, this is what I got to do as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
It came true.
Yes,
it was like, I did something that was poignant.
Mm-hmm.
It hit people. I didn't write it, by the way, but I still take a lot of credit for a lot of the, like...
It really couldn't have come to fruition without the style that you were so masterful at adopting.
Right, and I wanted to emulate. I wanted to f***ing her. Like, the girl under the desk.
Yeah. Texting her mom.
Man, that I did two versions of that. And, like, but it's like, it happened. And I, you know, and from that, my life changed.
Mm.
In a weird way, because I don't sell more books, really. I don't, like, I didn't get bombarded with a bunch of offers for drawing a bunch of stuff or anything like that. It was because it was, like, this thing I could observe.
Mm.
This guy had this tweet machine that got Patton Oswalt to reshare it. No, you know, it was, like, halfway through a bunch of tweets when someone was like, someone should credit these people. So it was like, I didn't get a huge thing, which is fine, because I got to observe it from an outsider. Like, whoa, I did it. Like, because, you know, how authentic would the interactions be if it was directly to me?
Uh-huh.
I like seeing the real thing. Like, people are like, I'm crying over this. I'm subscribing to Mad. You know, like, so it did a lot, and it's, you know, mind-blowing.
Have you always been a fan of Mad? It sounded like you were from when you were a teenager. Like,
when I was a kid, that's when I first got it. And then, you weaned off of it, but, like, there's other things. I mean, it's like spaghetti. It's, like, it's in our world always.
Right.
There's somewhere you can find it, and it's, like, and it's gotten into ours. Maybe a mushroom is a better thing. It's, like, it's mycelia has gotten into the world. The spores are all over. I mean,
it's
people,
a fungoid infection sneaking underneath the canopy.
Satire and, like, you know, healthy skepticism of shit.
Yep.
Right? You know, like... It's just question stuff.
Do you think this piece is reflective of where Mad needs to go to be relevant?
I think that that was the thing that I was like, wow, this has raised the bar for them.
Yeah.
What are they going to do?
I agree. Yeah.
You know, and I hope that I was going to jump on board and they're like, come on in, man. Mm-hmm. That's raised the bar together.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I think other people had other plans.
Okay. Right?
And I think due to a desire for money, some things get cut. Last one in, last one out, kind of, you know, like it's, or
got
first
it.
One, you know, last one in, first one out.
Mm-hmm.
So things were cut, people are taken out of the situation, and now they're limited, you know, they're being, this might be controversial, but it's like, they're being silenced. Because, you know, who owns Warner Brothers? AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
AT&T sends someone down, says, make some cuts, make us some money. Also keep us apolitical, because we got to have our money in these things.
That's right.
So what's the least apolitical thing under their umbrella? Mad Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
What's out there to everybody? Mad Magazine. It's on the stands. You can get it next to Time Magazine or some other thing. Let's get that the shit. out of there, you know. So like, so they're just silencing it, and it's just gonna fade away. If we don't, like, you know, if people don't want it, you know, if they wanted to, if they were ready to, you know, put it in the ground like David Bowie or something like that, it's like, because that's like, that's how the, it was like falsely reported. It's dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone took off with it, and
right,
it's almost like everyone was ready to say it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Mad Magazine's dead. Wow. Because you know, most people thought the same thing. It's like, I read Mad Magazine since I was a kid. Oh, it's still, oh, that's a thing? Really? That's cool.
You know, but there are still kids today, you know?
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, they might not be reading Mad, but like, the idea that there's something like that out there needs to happen. Mm-hmm. So, like, I hope that there is something for the younger crowds and the younger generation that makes them think about
mm-hmm.
you know, the way Mad does, you know, did for us or whatever else. Like, it's, there needs something to spark them, make them think different.
And you're still actually contributing to the magazine. You had a piece in the latest issue, in issue 10.
So I'm in number 10, which is the latest Halloween. So like a year later, I did another piece in issue 8, but a year later, you know, I'm doing something now with Matt Cohen again. And it's, you know, we're trying to take down global warming, you know, or like the...
Yeah, you've got the lobbyists.
The world burning and what's causing it.
So have you met Matt by this point?
I have. We went to San Diego because for the Eisners, we were like, you know, excited.
Yeah.
And like, this is... For me, you know, being an independent person, I didn't think Eisner or like being invited, you know, come out to San Diego for a reason... is going to happen for a while, mm-hmm. you know, like thinking, oh, I still got time. I got to do something. I'm not doing anything important yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, I'm going to take this chance. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to have like some free drinks or whatever, like whatever they got.
Go to some of the after parties. Have some fun.
Open bar.
I got a good handshake now. Mark Palm, Eisner nominee.
You
know,
like, there you go.
So I'm going to take a chance. So Matt Cohen and I were out there like, oh, that the guy ended up having like a gallstone or something like that.
Oh, no.
He had to like leave the convention a couple days in, which sucks because like he had a whole plan for networking, but I think he did a lot, but it was like, man, you know, we're all here for this, and that's upsetting, but yeah, it was interesting. He's a cool guy. I, you know, glad we got to work together again. He actually bought the original artwork for this, which is nice.
Oh really?
Yeah. it's great, and it's kind of like it's a weird little tiny thing, because we actually I tried to make sure that we communicated. I talked to Susie, I talked to Matt. Yeah. I wanted to know these people. Like, I'm working from your script,
mm-hmm.
but like, what do you think?
Right.
You know, and I think there's like weird things, like they don't get to see the artwork until it's done.
So the process is you receive a script, then you come up with a thing, then you send it off, and then they have critiques or whatever. They bring it back to you until the final.
Yeah, I give them, you know, roughs, and then I do tighter pencils, and then inks and colors.
How much input do they give you? Like for the Dr. Seuss themed one. Were they like, we need more Lorax?
I don't know how they take Matt's script, because he had this written and then they break it up. But Susie's pretty good about giving me like, she'll cobble together some like clip art or like, okay, I'll take these Seuss things from online and kind of push it together and be like, let's do this. Let's have a mountain scene. These things are here. Let's mention this, you know. So it's kind of mapped out.
Mm.
And then I have to kind of just like cull it together and comb it out and make it look real nice. So it's the Seuss thing, you know, like the gory thing, I'd had like muscle memory, so I could do that.
Yeah.
Seuss, I've never done that.
Oh really?
I had no idea even where to begin. I'm like, I went to the library, reserved all the books. I'm like, okay, these are the ones. I'm like, and I'm looking at the line weights, looking at the brush strokes. I'm like, wow, he's a little looser than I thought he was gonna be.
Mm.
He's what kind of pens and brushes? I don't know. You know, like, so I got obsessed with it, which is great because now I have that in my toolbox.
Yeah,
nice. Excellent.
And it's been actually helping with cartooning, being a little looser.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So yeah, like going through that and trying to figure out these things and make sure I draw the Lorax's right, you know, draw Seuss, you know, or the Cat in the Hat, and get all that stuff, because I like being authentic. I like, you know, I even, the palette that I originally chose was like based on, you know, CMYK, four color process, the way, you know, Seuss is very particular about his colors too. So like he was all hands on in that stuff. And I wanted to, it sucks that there doesn't seem to be any record of the materials he used or the tools. There's no footage of him drawing, and like I wanted to see that. And I was asking people I know, like Jim Woodring or whatever, like, you know, how do you think, and how do you think he did it? And they're like, oh, brush and I thought you'd be more obsessed and more like,
yeah, it almost seemed like Jim having me, well.
Yeah. You know you're coming full circle on some stuff here, right?
No.
Well, you were talking earlier about who cares about brushes? Who cares about this?
Oh,
just
yeah,
draw.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
So, yeah, are you listening to yourself right now?
Yeah. Yeah. It was more of just like, I wanted to see it so that I could fake it.
I understand.
Try to get the technique down so you could just emulate it better.
Right, just because I could know, okay, so he's using that, so he's trying to get this line with it or something like that. And that way I can, like, well, I'll use this brush pen instead or, you know.
Right.
I don't know. All that stuff is very fascinating. I love doing it because it's kind of how I learned how to draw.
That's
learning
right.
how to draw from other people, like Todd McFarlane and Jim Lee, and that stuff I got stuck in for too long. Mm-hmm. Like I learned it and that I didn't, it took forever to learn to get out of it. Mm-hmm. It was like a rut that I got stuck in.
Right.
Cause I thought that was going to get me somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's why I would want to discourage people from like, don't try to draw comics just so you can do this other thing. Like just draw your comics.
Yeah. Right.
You know, if that's really what you want to do, this should not be a jumping point for you.
Nice. So what's on the horizon for you?
I got something from Mad 11. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be new material in Mad number 11, which is like the worst 20 of the year. It's like their kind of annual thing that they do.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. But that will also mark as like the part where they start doing reprinted material more than anything else.
Got it. Okay.
Tom Richmond got fired. You know, there's no more movie parodies or anything like that. So, you know, subscribe, ask your local retailer for, you know, get this on your, you know, monthly poll because, you know, that's what's going to keep it alive and, you know, keep interest going.
Yeah.
So I've done that, but I'm working on the Fang number 2.
Great.
I got 30 some pages to ink. And that's going to be another like 60 pager that I'm going to try to get distributed through Fantagraphics because that was enormous help being an independent person.
Mm-hmm.
And then Punch to Kill number 3 is going to be coming out. So.
And how about the Short Run Festival?
Short Run, that is coming up on November 9th. I'm going to have my own table there. I don't know the table numbers, but...
That's okay. I'll find you.
I'll be there. I'm going to have some prints. I'm going to have some new zines. I just did a collaboration with another local cartoonist, writer, Brandon Lehman. He's a really funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a book called Florida Man. It was something we actually pitched to Mad that like we just never heard back from, basically. But... We're like, oh, let's just make a little zine out of it afterwards. So it's based on a true story.
Yes. Aren't they all? Aren't all the Florida Man stories based on true events?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I mean.
I just want it to be that one guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just one guy, yeah.
This man of many, many wonders.
That's what Brandon's idea is. Like, this could be a continuing thing. He's like, we're gonna put this Florida Man, like, mulleted dude in all the scenarios of the Florida Man stories and adapt those. So, because they're really fantastic. I mean, the one we did has got aliens and Jesus and golden tickets.
Dang.
Yeah.
Nice.
Little
nice.
Alligator. It's going to be great.
Like a little alligator or just a little bit of alligator.
Alligator. We're down for this.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, these are enough clues. You don't Google those things.
No, definitely
Florida
not.
Man. If people wanted to find Florida Man, where can they go?
They could find Brandon's table or my table at Short Run. That's when it's going to debut.
All right. So, and Short Run Pavilion is Saturday, November 9th at the Fisher Pavilion at the Seattle Center. Cool. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here
at
Comic Sunshine.
Yeah, totally.
Thanks for letting me rant off to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If people wanted to find more of your stuff online, where can they go?
A really good place is my Etsy page. I believe I have it under the nomenclature Swell Zombie. But if you Google me, Mark Palm Etsy, you'll find links to that.
It's Mark with a C, not Mark with a K.
Yes. And Palm like the tree. and also, if you want to buy the Fang, you can get that directly from Fantagraphics.com.
Mm-hmm.
You had some Tumblr pages for like the inside or for the Intruder. I thought when I was looking for you, I found like 3 or 4 other things. So
yeah, I'm
use that
over.
Google.
Yeah, exactly. Pick your poison once you're on Google. I try to put things everywhere. So
yes. Excellent. All right.
Nice.
Well, Mark, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure to have you. Thank you.
Yeah, to find more of Perfect Bound Podcast, visit us at perfectboundpodcast.com. This show is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Engine here, 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford. or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsengine.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Overtime for Mark Palm. Thank you so much. It's usually something I say during the live show. Anyway, we'll see you next week.